One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's gonna be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpan Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, ryansickler.com, and Ryan Sickler on all your social media. And again, look, you know I love what I do. Thank God I'm still here, and I can't thank you guys enough for all your support. So please hit that subscribe on the YouTube channel. Keep watching. Keep telling everybody. We're doing something important over here, all right? And if you have to have more, then you got to check out the Patreon. I know I say it every week here, but I think it every week on that show. What are we going to hear that's different from last week? And every week, y'all fucking bring the heat. So it's called The Honeydew with Y'all. It's your stories, and they're the wildest fucking stories of anything I've ever heard in my life. It's only $5 a month. And if you sign up for a year now, you'll get over a month free. You get The Honeydew a day early, you get it ad free, and you get it at no additional cost. All right. And if you're looking for a new podcast to listen to, then go listen to my old podcast, The Crab Feast. Yeah, I'm promoting an old podcast. It's a 7.5-year library. And if you listen to 2 episodes a week, still going to take you 3 years to get through it, okay? So go listen, subscribe. It's a great storytelling podcast, and that's the biz here. Now, you guys know what we're doing over here. I always say we highlight the lowlights, and these are the stories behind the storytellers. I am very excited to have this guest on today. First time here on The Honeydew. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ian Fidance. Welcome to The Honeydew, Ian.
Thank you for having me, brother. I'm excited to be here.
Dude, how about the walk up outside?
It could not have been planned better.
If someone wrote that in the script, we're like, this is too, nah,
dude,
this is too.
It was insane. And also, I didn't see, you were behind a tree.
Yeah,
so
I was yelling
for you. So you just appeared out of nowhere. I get out of my car, I get a cane. You come up, you get a cane. I'm on right hand, you're on left hand, you get a joint, I get a cigarette. I'm like, is this a...
Sunglasses, regular glasses,
yeah,
hoodie,
I mean,
the drinks, Chick-fil-A, dude, Starbucks,
yeah,
dude.
It is just a mirror.
It was unbelievable.
It was incredible.
It
the
was
inverse Ian. It was wild. It was awesome.
It was like inside out parallel universe.
Yeah,
I fucking
yeah,
loved it. Dude.
Totally.
I loved
it was amazing.
Well, thank you very much for being here. I'm glad you're doing well after that. But before we get into whatever we're going to talk about, plug, promote, everything you'd like, please.
Give it all up. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Twitch, iAnimal69. IanFidance.com for all my dates. And I have a great podcast, Being Ian with Jordan. My best friend, Jordan Jensen, and I, she's a great comic. We have brain parasites and are just rat-brained and ADHD, and it's a lot of fun. And I also have Bye Guys on Gas Digital with me and Zach Amico. And yeah, I got a lot of dates coming up. I'm super excited. I'm on the road every weekend until like June. And I'm shooting a special in New York City.
Yeah. Good
and
for
I
you.
Can't fucking wait.
Well, also, I want to throw out a congrats to you because you just sold out the Hollywood Improv on Sunday night. And that's a fucking, that's huge. So
yeah,
good for
thanks,
you.
Man.
I said it feels incredible to fly into a major city and sell out their comedy club. It's fucking
it was one of their comedy truly clubs. Magical, man. Yeah. It was amazing. I got a standing ovation at the end, and I had the mic in the crowd, and we're doing a sing along to one of my favorite hardcore bands. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, should I stage dive? Should I just, you know, and I fall on this 23-year-old like Instagram model? I'm like, okay, never mind.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was really neat. And my good buddies were there, and it was just such a, you know, to be able to put my friends on the show and make it like such a fun hang was like so cool, you know. And I love watching my friends do stand up and have a good time. And so I appreciate that. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, good for you.
It was great. It was really
those are the
fun.
Good times. Let's talk about the shit show.
Let's get into it. Let's go.
Well, so just outside talking to you, I found out you're from Delaware.
Delaware.
There are not a lot of Delawareans that really come out of there so much. I know there's Aubrey Plaza.
Delaware. A guy named Joey Bides.
Biden's a little Delaware
you know?
Guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so me, I'm just the dirty
Joe
dick. Dirty I mean, dick Delaware doozy. That's what I am, dog. You know? Uh-huh.
So tell me about your world. What's it like growing up as Ian in Delaware?
Man, I don't know, man. It's just the same place as everywhere else. You know, you find your own fun, you do your own thing, and then you leave as soon as you can.
But I mean specifically for you. Your mom and dad are married at the time. You're living in Delaware. That's where you're born?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, born and raised in Delaware. And the place where I was baptized is the same place where my parents got married and where we had my dad's funeral. And it was, you know.
Man, you talk about full circle.
Yeah,
that
right?
It really is.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you an only child?
I'm an only child in Delaware. Mom and dad, amazing family. My childhood was like so idyllic. My dad would come home from work. I'd run out of the house. The dog would run around him. My mom would be at the door. He'd come home. He was all-time quarterback. All the kids would play football at my house, you know, snow days. He's everybody in the neighborhood loved John, you know. And
what did he do for a living?
He was a train inspector for CSX.
Oh, shit. Philly. Okay. Yeah.
And so I lived in Delaware, and he would drive back and forth to Philly every day for work. And it's full circle again. I started comedy in Philly, and every night I'm driving back and forth from Delaware, except he was coming from family's house with a wife and a kid, and I'm literally coming from a halfway house because I burned my life down driving to and from Delaware. My dad's making a living supporting his family. I'm doing open mics for free, paying $400 a week because I'm living in a fucking halfway house. It was a little different, Ryan. A little different. You know? I'm just like my dad, man. You know?
Yeah.
And the halfway house I lived in was directly across the street from the bowling alley my mom threw me my surprise 18th birthday party. And I'm just like, how did I get here? At 18, I'm going to college. Friendship,
how did I
you know?
Get over here?
I'm like, I wish instead of a bowling ball, it was a crystal ball, you know, for me to just like, you know.
Okay.
I'm talking a 40-foot walk.
Yeah.
I'm in the halfway house. I got to be home by 10 p.m. because I'm on curfew, you know, and I'm getting my chores done. I'm out on the porch smoking cigarettes next to a pagan meth dealer, and I'm looking like, where did I go wrong? You know, it's fucking gnarly. But that's Delaware, baby. That's Delaware.
You said it's just like growing up everywhere else. Yeah.
You know, we all get piss test every week. You know,
a little Delaware stuff. That's like,
yeah.
Okay, let's go back to childhood.
Yeah.
All right. Now you sent your bullet points in. So you lose your dad at 8. Your dad dies when you're 8. How does your dad pass away?
He died in an accident work on the train yard.
No.
Yeah.
How?
It was gnarly.
Do you mind talking about it?
Or
at least you don't have to get like specific, but
yeah.
Was he run over?
No. There was, I mean, it's so funny with these train derailments. Everyone's talking about safety regulations and it's like, man, shit happens and then change is made. You know, my dad died and then afterwards they were like, oh, maybe we should put some safety regulations on this, you know? And the funny thing is where he died in Philly is now an IKEA.
No.
So I, you know, to go see where he died, I have to be like, hey, you tell me how to put together a couch. How do you put together a broken family? You know? Anyone? Can you help? You know? But matter of fact, dude, I headlined the Philly Punchline. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. All my guys I started with in Philly came and, you know, I sold well. It was like, old boy comes home, you know?
Yeah, it's a fun club.
Yeah, and we went to IHOP on a Sunday and I got to like buy breakfast. I was like, man. And then I'm putting it together. I go, oh my God, I can walk from this IHOP to where my dad died. This is crazy. It was like such a moment of like things coming together. And I didn't cry. I didn't know sad. Dude, I went, I laughed. I talked to him.
Bought three futons.
I brought over eggs for him. I brought over moons on my hammy, you know? And dude, I got shot with these memories because I saw the big like warehouse because I remember like take your kid to work day and he like brought me up and dude, I got this vision of us pulling up in the truck, getting out, me going, seeing his locker and I saw the building. It's all like dilapidated, you know, and it was just such a fucking, I don't know, it was a really, a friend asked me and they go, how does that make you feel? Oh my God, I'm so sorry. And honestly, man, and this is, you know, like comedy's great, this and that, cool, awesome. But the thing I'm most proud of, man, is they go, how does that make you feel? And I go, at peace. And that is such an amazing achievement because I spent, it's coming up on 3 decades, 30 years on May 20th. And I spent so long in like anger and sadness and loss. And man, to come back and have all those things lining up, it was just beautiful. I got no other feeling but gratitude and happiness.
Yeah.
You know, which I never thought I would get.
And I'll tell you what, if you don't get there, it doesn't line up like that either because you don't see it.
Yeah.
You're just looking through a different filter of anger and rage.
Yeah.
And also I was the same way too. Like I didn't even realize sometimes how angry I was. And I'd be like, oh, you think that's just normal in my family? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's normal shit. I didn't know that was anger.
Well, dude, alcohol like blew my life up, but I'm like thankful for it because getting to the bottom of a bottle, I could finally be like sad and release emotion. And like that, I would get drunk and like yell at him in the sky and access this thing. And dude, talk about anger. I was like such an angry driver. I would just go up and like slap drinks out of people's hands
for
and,
no
like,
reason.
Try to fight. Like, come on, hit me. Like, dude, insane.
Yeah,
insane behavior.
You get killed.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah. Do you know how many times I've cartoonishly gotten thrown out of a bar, like the old heave-ho by the bouncers, you know?
Just for slapping drinks and shit and being a dick
visions,
at the bar.
Right now, visions of just a fist coming in my face from a bouncer. And I'm like, boom, I deserved it, you know? Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
All right, wait. I want to take you back to a time that might be uncomfortable for
all
you.
Right, let's
but
go.
You're 8 years old. Eight. How do you find out that your dad has died?
Man, well, this is a trip. So strap in. Pack your bags.
I don't know if these belts are tight enough.
Did you bring your passport? Because we're going on a journey. My dad and I were best friends. I mean, this guy was my guy. There was a connection there that, again, man, I knew him for 8 years, and we were closer in that than friends of mine that had their dad their whole life. I got friends that have dads. They might as well be dead. And this guy, man, when I was born, I was in the hospital for 30 days. I had, like, jaundice. I was on this machine. I was in incubator. He wrote me a letter every day that I didn't see until I was, like, in my 20s. And
no.
Yeah. And before he would leave.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
that
bro.
That day had to be.
Yeah, bro.
We'll get to it.
And
we'll get
I,
to it. Oh,
every day
God.
Before he left for work, he'd write me a note on a legal pad. Just me and write a note to me and my mom and, you know, make jokes and everything and like talk about the day before or whatever and how he's excited about the weekend, this and that. Every day before he went to work, I have stacks of these letters. And, he and I were just so close, man. We would have guys weekend at the beach where it was like he and I would just go to the beach in Rehoboth, Delaware. And we would, the last day, we'd wake up to watch a sunrise over the beach. And, you know, we were always incredibly close. And the way I would get out of trouble when I was younger is I would imitate him. I would make him laugh. And then he couldn't be mad, you know.
That's what my fucking daughter does to me.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
She imitates her mom. I go, what do I do? And she goes, you go, get to bed. And I go, oh, I start to laugh so hard. I go, I do fucking clap.
Yeah.
I go, let's
yeah.
go. Let's go.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And
yep.
I don't even see it. Yep. I started laughing so hard.
Yeah.
I go, you're lucky. I do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I would just, I would go at dinner. I would go, damn it, boy. He would just crack up,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so he and I, we were fucking synced up, locked in, right? And so the day before he died, my aunt died, my great aunt,
oh,
my
shit.
Aunt Sis. So it was his aunt, and we had just reconnected with that part of his family because his dad was a bad alcoholic. And he told his dad, he said, look, you're not meeting my son till you get your life together. So I didn't meet my grandfather until I was like 7, a couple months before he died. And I sat on his lap, and this guy was so beat up from like alcohol and drugs. I sit on his lap, and the first thing I said, I go, Pop, are you a robber? But a matter of fact, when that dude was dying in the hospital, I'll never forget this. Me and my dad and my grandpa's like brothers and everything, we were all in the room. He's in the bed, and he goes, and he couldn't talk, and he just like mumbled something, and all of us just broke down laughing. I just remember like that moment of like laughter brought these fighting.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
It's men together, you know. That was like really cool. And so we connected with his side of the family. And the day before my dad died, my Aunt Sis died. So we're all, you know, at the house talking and really.
And I don't mean to interrupt, but your great aunt dying the day before your father, is yeah. that your first experience with death?
No. My grandfather, my dad's dad died in like 91.
How old were you then?
6.
Man, so you're getting it 6, 7, 8. That's yeah. bang, bang, bang.
Yeah. I mean, but oof, I saw that was a, like, I only saw my dad cry 2 times when his dad died and when he had knee surgery, and I just heard him on the steps going down the steps because he was like in such pain, you know. But my Aunt Sis died. We're all at the house, and you know, I from a young age, dark humor and you know, gallows humor was what got us through. And we're like laughing because my dad's like, boy, you better hope I go before your mom, because if not, you're in for a world of hurt. Because my mom was very like coddle, you know, and my dad was like the strict. I had like these like rule, and I loved it. I loved the discipline and like, you know, like bedtimes and like rules. You know, I work better on structure, and I've, you know, after he died, I never had it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all laughing about that and everything. And the next morning, I wake up and it's like 4:30 in the morning. He's getting ready for work and I go to the bathroom. I go, Dad, don't go to work today. Stay home with me. I'll take off from school. Please don't go to work. And I'm hugging his leg, begging him not to go to work. And he's going, no. I go, something bad's going to happen. He goes, you're just upset.
You said this.
Yeah. You're just upset that Aunt Sis died. It's okay. Tuck me into bed. And he goes, I'll pick you up after school. We have baseball. You know, I love you. And we kiss goodbye. And then I go to sleep. And I have a dream that he died.
Are you fucking? I swear to God, something bad's gonna happen. Then you go to bed and you have a dream about this.
I dream he dies.
Do you remember the dream? Do you remember how in the dream?
I just remember him dying.
Okay.
And I was very like, I loved God when I was younger. Like I wanted to be a priest, you know.
Well, you really love God.
Oh, yeah. Bro, my parents gave me like a cartoon picture Bible. And to punish me, they'd take it away. Like it was, you know, like I used to get picked on. And my dad was like, you got to fight these kids back. And I'm like, but Jesus, we turn the other cheek, you know. Yeah, like total.
Take that fucking goddamn
total gay boy for God, dude.
For God.
So
I'm gay for
dude,
God.
I was so gay for that's God. Great, it was dude. Out of control, man. Like Jesus.
You better make that t-shirt or
gay
something,
for God.
Dude.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, dude.
That's a big it's gonna be a big seller in the Midwest,
oh, yeah.
Dude.
Oh yeah.
Oh shit.
I was gay for God and I dreamt he died and I woke up and I remember sitting up and going, oh my God, thank God it was a dream. My dad would never die. God would never let that happen to my family. And that morning, I don't remember this, but my mom says that morning he kept calling the house to check in and like make us laugh. And my mom was like, you're going to get fired. We're not going to, you know, have any money to live. You better go get back to work. And he just kept calling. I love you guys. I love you. And then I had that dream. I said, God would never let that happen to my family. And I went to school and I'm going to the bathroom early in the morning and this girl stops me, a grade younger than me. My mom was a teacher's aide at my school.
Okay.
And so I was in second grade. My mom was a teacher's aide in first grade. And this first grader comes up to me when I'm going to the bathroom. She goes, are you Ian Finance? I go, yeah. And she goes, your mom had to leave school because your dad got in an accident.
That's how you found out?
I just knew. They said accident. I just knew, and I started just wailing, and a teacher had to come up and go, no, your mom, you know, your Aunt Sis died, so your dad was just feeling upset, so everybody's at your Aunt Sis's house. It's okay, and I'm like, uh-huh, and then I go back to class, and there's an announcement over the speaker, Ian Finance, please report to the main office, and I fucking knew. And I tried so hard to posture and like, I put my Phillies hat on backwards and I was like, I get to leave, have fun in school, you know, just making it out like I'm the lucky one, you know? And, you know, my mom and my grandfather were there. And in the morning that day, it was like so sunny. And then when I go out to school, it was just cloudy, drizzle. It was wild. So I go to the car and my grandfather, we got him a shirt that said, help, I can't, like, help, I'm talking and I can't shut up. Like, he was just, I love him. He was the best storyteller, always running his mouth, you know, his name's Poppy, you know, we called him. He was in the car and my mom was, and it was the first time he'd ever been quiet, you know.
1 second.
Yeah.
I'll pause you there. Kirsten's giving me a note that says, careful with your rings on the table.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, and I'm sorry to stop you right
oh,
there.
God,
but remember,
sorry.
We're talking about Poppy and we're going to yeah. start. You know, you don't have to take
no,
them off.
No, sorry.
You're fine.
Okay, I'm putting it back. Okay.
Sorry, I hate
did
to
I ruin
interrupt
it?
You.
Okay. No,
you
oh, didn't. God. This is worse than when my dad died. This is fucking a new tragedy.
You better keep that part in. You better
keep
that
all.
Part.
Keep it all. So,
I just want to say this too. This is really fucking hitting me because my daughter's 8 and I can't, and I did almost die. And I can't imagine her getting this news at any age, but this is you and you have such a vivid memory of all this that I know she would, and it terrifies me.
Yeah.
Please, your grandfather.
So on the way home, he molested me. Oh, could you imagine?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That was the first time I got molested.
That was about to be holy.
Poppy, more like pop me.
Woo. Oh, my God.
So anyway, my father's dead. And so we are.
So mom and grandpa.
We get in the car and we go home.
Are they telling you
there's
anything?
There's just nothing. We'll talk when we get home. And when I was a kid, I was a little bit of a whiny baby. And they would say, do you need a cry rag? Because I would cry a lot, you know? And when I would act like a girl, they would call me Ianetta, which kind of, you know, explains some things. But my mom goes, we need to get a cry rag. I go, okay. So we go in the living room. She sits me down. She goes, there was an accident at work today and your daddy died. And I just remembered screaming, just screaming. And I couldn't stop screaming. And yeah.
And then now you've got your aunt dead, your dad's dead. I mean, what happens? What do you do next? I mean, are you out of school for a while?
The family comes over and you just sit in silence because no one knows what to say. Because it's
especially to a fucking 8-year-old. Because
it's a fucking tragedy. And then everybody grabs you and goes, well, he's in a better place. Your dad's with you now forever. And I'm like, are you a better fucking place? We were just having catch yesterday. Fuck you.
Yep.
Are you kidding me? I'll be there for you forever. And then everyone disappears.
Yep.
You know, nobody knows how to deal with a 40-year-old grieving mother and an 8-year-old boy that's had the most cataclysmic, traumatic thing happen. And then you see when you get upset, everyone around you gets upset. So you go, oh, don't get upset. I'm making the adults cry. So you just fucking fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
You know?
How does your relationship with your mom change? You guys, do you get super close now? Or you said,
I mean, now we are.
Like,
now
no,
we
I mean
are.
Then. Like oh. At 8, do you remember, like, are you pushing back?
Dude, this woman is such a fucking
because it's just you
angel
and her.
Fucking human of just like, that woman did everything she possibly humanly could to make my life okay and to try to give me as best a normal life as possible. And, you know, she just, I'm forever indebted to who she is as a person, as a mother. And, just, she's an amazing person, but I'll, you know, look, it is what it is. She lost it, you know,
and
it was a thing of, you know, we never really talked about it because it was so hard. And dude, I'll never forget, man. Again, like, and this goes back into the alcohol thing about finally letting me feel emotion because, you know, we're at the viewing, and you know, the police had to show up. There was like a huge fucking dust up. You know, my mom at the funeral had to get taken out on an ambulance. She passed. It was like a fucking
Jesus.
Shit show, bro. It was a fucking shit show. Whatever. And so, I'll never forget. I close his casket, and they had to pry my fingers off it. I'm screaming. They throw me in the car, and we're driving to my grandparents' house, and I'm just wailing. I didn't have the vocabulary or anything to process or put. The only thing I knew to do was just gutturally yell. And, dude, my uncle fucking slammed the car brakes and was like, shut the fuck up. Stop screaming. Stop screaming. Stop crying.
Damn.
And he did it. I know right where it is off Union Ave in Wilmington, Delaware, going to fucking Delaware Ave. There's a turn and there's a train track, and he stopped right at the fucking train track.
I was about to say.
And goes, shut the fuck up. And I'm like, if this is not a sign, you know, like, could you pick a different place, Uncle Bill, you fucking dickhead, you know?
Oh, God.
I mean, are you kidding me? What are we doing? You know? What is happening?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah. So who, if anyone, then becomes your male influence in life? Does your
Poppy.
Mom remarry? It's your
Poppy.
Grandfather. Okay.
He stepped up, and I mean, and the thing about him, man, is he had a son, my Uncle Danny, who this guy, man. I understood him once I became a drug addict and an alcoholic, in a way that I wish today I could share with him. But you know, it's hard to have that conversation when a guy blows his head off. Anyway, so
okay. So you can't have that conversation even if he'd like to.
Woo! Thanks a lot, Vietnam PTSD. And again, alcohol, this motherfucker, the only times he talks about Vietnam is when he's fucking loaded, telling me what it's like to shoot a man in the face. And I'm like, Uncle Danny, I'm fucking in my teens. What are you doing, Uncle Danny? This motherfucker used to get loaded and call me and tell me he's going to kill himself while I'm playing Sonic the Hedgehog. And I'm like, Uncle Danny, I'm trying to collect the rings right now. Can you hold off? I'm going to kill myself if I don't pass this level, you know? I mean, what are you doing, bud? Sorry, my mom's on home. Yeah, I'll be the suicide hotline. Come on. I got the phone here, like, uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah, rope, chair, uh-huh. You know? Like, what the fuck, Danny? But, you know, he was in Vietnam at 19. Fucked him up, bro.
I mean, I can't imagine anyone that went to any war at 19 that are, they're kids that aren't fucked up,
bro.
Show me one person that went and saw anything like they saw that came back and are like,
nerve damage from Agent Orange. He's going around pulling his buddy's bodies out, you know, like he was guarding weapons caches, shooting guys in the head. I'm like, and this motherfucker, you know, I mean, good God, today I can love him so much and I wish I could have this conversation with him. But, you know, I couldn't see it at the time, but he was, you know, he was Mr. Promise. He was, I'll be there for you always, and then just never, never, never. And I get it, man. I get it. And it's so funny, when I got sober later, I met his stepson, Michael. And he was telling me stories about my Uncle Danny, about him and his friends would come home loaded and Danny would be just in his underwear, fucking in the bag, you know, just fucking, you know, whatever, man. And it's so funny now. Like, dude, my grandfather caught him snorting cocaine, and because he had to move back into my grandparents' house when he was like in his 50s, you know, he's in his underwear snorting cocaine. And my grandfather's so innocent. Uncle Danny's like over the table and he's like, whoa. And my grandfather comes in. He thinks he's trying to have sex with the dresser. He like didn't understand. He's like, Danny's out of control. He's like, what are you doing, Danny? Because he's half naked. And God forbid my son's on coke. You know, it's just fucking out of control, man. Dresser. Out of control. He's like, he's having sex. I know he's divorced. I mean, it was a fucking nut house.
This is where you're living.
You know, this is where I'm living. I'm getting shipped off to my grandparents' house. Uncle Danny's fucking a dresser doing coke in the next room. I'm figuring out my body, thinking my dad's watching me. It's a fucking recipe for disaster. All these people are like, your dad's with you forever. I'm like, well, this would be great when I find jerking off and gay porn. This won't fuck me up. You know?
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially because we're always growing and changing. Therapy is all about deepening your self-awareness and understanding, because sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react the way we do until we talk through things. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. Look, you know I'm a big believer in therapy. I go to therapy myself. I try all different kinds of things to be a better person. And therapy is great. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills. It's helpful for setting boundaries and empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, all right? If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp's a great option. It's convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can always switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/honeydew today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/honeydew. There's no quick fix for anxiety and depression. It's not finding a new therapist or starting an exercise routine, not more in regular meditation or a better diet. Sometimes you need something to unlock your brain, a new way of thinking about and seeing the world. Maybe that thing
is guided ketamine therapy from MindBloom. There's a new tool to improve your mental health, at-home ketamine therapy. MindBloom is the leader in at-home ketamine therapy, having safely helped thousands of people overcome their anxiety and depression. Unlike traditional talk therapy, ketamine works quickly and doesn't have the unpleasant side effects of traditional antidepressants. In a study of over 1,200 MindBloom clients, 89% reported improvements in their anxiety and depression after only two sessions. Right now, MindBloom is offering my listeners $100 off your first six-session program when you sign up at mindbloom.com/honeydew and use promo code honeydew. Take the first step and break free from your anxiety and depression with MindBloom. mindbloom.com/honeydew and use promo code honeydew. Now, let's get back to the do.
Oh my God. So how long are you there? How long do you stay there?
What?
From what to what? What ages are
stay
you
where?
At your grandparents?
Where are we? I don't know where I am right now. I got kids at the Joey Buys. I don't know where I am right now. No, I live 5 minutes away, man. So okay. He would come over all the time. All right. I'd go over there, you know. And God bless my mom, man. But any reminder of my dad would be an issue, you know? Like,
you couldn't even talk about it.
Dude, I would watch home videos because we had a VHS tape, everything, whatever. And I'd watch these home videos and I just get so sad and we couldn't even say what it was. And my mom would just go, stop watching those videos. You get weird. You're being weird. It makes you weird. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. It makes you have feelings.
Yeah. But, you know, God bless my mom, man. She's trying to protect me. That's all she wanted to do was protect me, you know? She wanted me to be okay. She saw her little boy being upset. She didn't want that, you know? And, you know, my mom just cut off everyone on my dad's side, the family, of the life, because going around was, like, really upsetting, you know? Man, and then I would get upset.
Right.
So I didn't see my dad's side of the family for, like, almost two decades.
Because it would upset your mom.
Well, upset my mom, but upset me, which is a natural part of grieving, but it was, I don't want him to be upset. Let, you know, again, protecting. Mm-hmm. And I understand that now, you know? And what the fuck are you supposed to do? You're fucking 40, your husband dies, you get an 8-year-old that's fucking nuts, you know? Like, what do? You try to fucking protect him as best you can. And so, you know, that's what she did. And God bless her, man. She's the fucking best. But it was, you know, I was at my cousin's house every weekend. They were at mine. You know, these girls were like my sisters. I was the only boy in the family. So it was all me and all the girls. And then I was raised by, you know, women. And
you're losing your best friend, your father, 8 years old. Did you have anxiety about losing your mom?
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well,
oh, yeah. Dude, I couldn't sleep at kids' houses. I would go to sleepovers and just start screaming that my mom would die and she would have to pick me up. And then, like, you know, you're like hanging out with your friends at 8 and you just start like yelling and they're like, I don't want to go to that kid's house anymore, you know? Yeah. And I used to get so mad at my friends who like wouldn't love their dads or would be like, I hate my dad or whatever. Oh God, that would fucking really steam me up, man. And you know, yeah, I constantly was afraid my mom would die. You know, to this day, if I call and she doesn't pick up, I'm like, she's dead. I'm calling the neighbors, knocking the door, you know, Janine, get over there. Gail's Janine, dead. You know, yeah, and then meanwhile, my mom doesn't know how to work her phone.
Those are such good old school names.
Oh, yeah.
Janine and yeah. Gail.
Janine, I'm calling her friend Eileen. I'm like, Eileen, you got to get to the house. You know, meanwhile, my mom's going deaf.
Trio,
she can't
bro.
Hear the phone ring.
I love the trio, yeah. Bro. Eileen, Janine,
Gail. Oh, dude. She fucking had Linda, Kathy's, Shirley's. I mean, my mom.
Yeah.
My mom was leading the Delaware widow team, man. Because my mom hit it early. Nobody else's husbands died for like 20 more years. So when their husbands died, my mom's like, sit down. Let me tell you what it's about. You know?
Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at COSI.org.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Oh, man. Oh, man, dude. What a crew.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
The Delaware's
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I call it No Sex in the City. Just these fucking widows running around, ripping it up, going to the pool hall, getting loaded at Stanley's. I'm home having to pick my mom up. She's three sheets to the wind, you know.
Her, I love
it. Oh, dude, the
best. Have you picked her up, really?
Oh, yeah, that's great. Dude. Good, the good. Fucking best. Dude, when I was in a bad spot, I was living in this one-bedroom attic apartment in a farmhouse in Delaware, and I'm bad, man. And my mom comes over, and she goes, you know what? I've seen you do all this. Why don't you see me do it? I'm going to do what you do. And I rip her a fat gravity bong. I'm fucking making her drink vodka.
She's doing
it.
My
mom's getting loaded with me. And she's fucking yakking in the toilet. She's like, dude, she gets on this gravity bong. And finally she goes, we had a fucked up life. You know? She's finally going like,
it took all
that.
It
was wild, man. You know? I'm sitting there, bottle of vodka, ZZ Top Slam, like, Gail, you said it, sister, you know.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Fucking making my mom take gravity bong
rips. That's what it took. Yeah. It took all that to just reality to set in.
Yeah, my mom's like, oh, fuck, man. Shit was wild.
It just set her normal. Yeah.
Just ripping my mom a fat, creamy gravity bong. Out of a Brita filter and a 2-liter Sprite bottle.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Here, let's shift gears for a second. You've mentioned addiction a couple of times. All right, let's go to that. Yeah. What age do you start using? What are you
Eighth grade. Yeah, I mean, I'll never forget.
Was it alcohol first?
Yeah, my friends made me a shot, and I drank it, and I was like, dude, I want to feel this way all the time. This is fucking amazing. I felt it from the tip of my toes to the top of my head. And, I fucking, you know, got loaded at a New Year's Eve party in eighth grade. I'm falling out of my dad's, which is now my mom's truck. You know, I'm fucking 14. The first party I go to, I make such a fucking ass out of myself, man. Everybody's just like, ooh, beer. I run into the vodka and I'm like, this is fucking amazing. I pass out on the front lawn. I'm begging this kid to sell me weed. I'm like, I don't have the money now, but my grandma gives me a check for Christmas. I'll give you the check.
You know. This motherfucker just said my grandma gives me a check for Christmas to buy weed.
14. No, 13. I didn't turn. No, 14. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
just
what I've
a
never
fool,
heard.
Dude.
I've
a
never
fool.
Heard that one.
I had to fake sick because I was so embarrassed because everybody was like, dude, that kid's fucked up, you know? And then this motherfucker, his name was Paris. He was like the weed dealer or whatever. On his AOL profile, he puts for interest, ripping off fags for weed like Ian because he sold me like a gram of weed for like $40.
And wrote that on his fucking...
Yeah, so now I'm a fag named Ian, which is in secret, yes. And I fucking am at, like, I gotta not go to school because I'm trying to bribe these kids and to get me... And something ticked in. I go, I really like that girl, Christiana. I'll give you some of my grandma's Christmas check if you hook me up with her.
Somewhere.
So at 14, I'm trying to get a prostitute that's not even... I'm trying to have this guy pimp out his friend. I mean, it was fucking off to the races off the bat, you know? My grandfather picked me up. I'm on this front lawn. I had to lie and be like, I had food poisoning, you know? It's fucking gnarly. So then after that, I was like, no more.
How long did that go?
Well, I came up in like punk and hardcore and ska, and I was like in a band. So I straight edge was like that, finding straight edge, which is a lifelong promise of no drugs, no alcohol. You know, the music scene really kept me straight. You know, like I was straight up everything with music streams. I was X's on the back of my hands, fucking at shows. You know, friends of mine were slashing tires in parking lots at bars, like, fuck you, drugs destroy dreams, you know, like all this shit. And you couldn't tell me nothing. It was for the rest of my fucking life, I'm not doing that. You know, I don't want my dad being upset with me. I don't want him embarrassed, you know. And man, being straight edge, like, kept me on the level. Being involved in music kept me straight. You know, I had a crew of guys that we were all straight edge. It like emboldened us with the lyrics and everything, you know. And then it alienated me because I got away from those guys when I moved to New York at 18. And all those guys, we kind of lost touch. And then all my friends, I didn't have many friends in college. I just had like three guys and they were like drinking all the time. So I would go out. I wasn't drinking. So I'd leave at like 10 and just go home alone. And I'm like, oh, this kind of sucks. And so I started drinking alone because I was embarrassed because my whole identity was straight edgy. And, you know, Ian's fun. He doesn't even need drugs and alcohol to have a good time. I've always been, you know, like, woo. And so I started drinking alone. Like, dude, I would go to the fucking bar and so afraid that people would find me that I'd put on a costume. I'd put my jacket on inside out like I was like a fucking senator going to fucking get his dick sucked in an airport bathroom. I'm just like, oh, it's not me. Nobody cares. And I didn't know any drinks. The only drink I knew was an Alabama Slammer. So I'm just ripping them at a bar alone. And, yeah, and then eventually I came out as like, hey, I'm drinking. And my straight edge friends, we, you know, it's like, if you're not now, you never were, you know, like you turn your back on people when they break edge, you know. And
I didn't even know this was a thing. I didn't know the edge part of this. That's So they're like, it's, nah,
the phrase is true till death, you know.
I like that.
It's a true till death. Yeah, man.
So you keep drinking. You're like, whatever.
Oh, dude. Done with these guys. Fucking off to the races. I was in my dorm room once I started drinking. And do you remember Sparks? It was like the precursor to Four Loko. It was like alcoholic with energy.
I know Four Loko, yeah.
Right. Well, those God bless them. Holy shit. Fucking crashed my bicycle ripping Four Lokos. I crash. I'm on the Williamsburg Bridge. These people come up to grab me. I run away covered in blood because my Four Loko's rolling down the bridge.
That's why you're
like,
running.
You fucking asshole. Yeah. I saved the Four Loko instead of being like, I think I'm wildly injured, you know? And I'll never forget. I'm sitting in the common room and I got a fucking Sparks on my knee and it's like 2 p.m. And my buddy's like, what are you doing? I'm like, we drink. Isn't this what we do? You drink all the time? I'm drinking. I'm like, no. And so I was just round the clock drinking, you know, and then I started to get fucking sad. And that's when I would start to have these swings where I would drink and be a mess and just grab my friends and be like, do you think my dad's proud of me? You know, and that's the only time I could talk about my dad. And that's when the anger would kick in. And that's when I would fight people. And that's when I would want my ass kicked. And, you know, that's when I like just threw everything away and was like, I don't give a fuck. And that's when I was just in a fucking, I barely took a fucking sober breath from like, I don't know, like 21 until, I mean, I tried to get sober in 2008 and, dude, my fucking mom made me go see a priest, like all this shit. I went to an AA meeting and it's Alcoholics Anonymous. So I told everyone my name was Tom. Like, I thought you all like lie about your shit, you know? But these motherfuckers are like talking hilarious at me. They're like, it's your first time, brother. You're going to be the best day of your life. I went through this windshield. I got this DUI. I lost this and I'm sober. And I'm like, well, that never happened to me. I'm not one of you.
Yeah.
6 months later, I'm like sitting in rehab, like, I don't know this happened, you know? And
How did it happen? How'd you get into rehab?
No, I couldn't stop drinking.
But you acknowledged it, or were you intervention? Like, how did you finally get to rehab?
Well, my mom and my best friend threw me like an impromptu intervention.
Okay.
We went out to eat at the seafood restaurant in Delaware, and I'm drinking, and they're like visibly upset. And then, you know, everyone knew I had a problem except for me. I was the one that was like, you guys are crazy. I was like the last one to find out, you know. Meanwhile, I'm like waking up bleeding and like fucking, I would pass out on the street and take my clothes and shoes off and fold them next to me because I thought I was in bed. So.
And you're outside on the fucking street?
On the, a literal gutter drunk. I would use the curb as a pillow or like steps as a pillow. A gutter drunk. My friends would have to push me home in a shopping cart. And so I fucking go to the bathroom. I come back and they go, Ian, you have a problem. We want you to get help. And I'm like, this is a fucking intervention? Like, it is. And I'm like, you couldn't have gotten more people?
Is that what you
two
said?
Two people? Like, is that all I got left? Is two fucking people caring about me? You couldn't fucking call Uncle Danny?
Yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't have to bring his head. Just bring his body.
Yeah, just bring
know?
His body, goddamn it.
And so I ended up, I was a carpenter at the time. I ended up losing my job. Not even lose it. I just kept missing work, showing up late, drunk on the job site. And I woke up, I was drinking, I was going to be late. And I called my boss. I go, Gene, I got in a car accident. I'll be to work. And he goes, okay, cool. Yeah. Just bring the accident report. And, you know, you can come on the job site. And I'm like, oh yeah, no problem. So I'm literally fucking Googling accident reports that I'm going to try to Photoshop to put my info on. And I can't find it. So I go outside and I just start kicking my car and like trying to knock my bumper off to make it look like I got in a fucking accident. Yeah. I knocked the mirrors off, you know, I'm kicking it. Meanwhile, I locked my keys inside. I called a friend to pick me up. He pulls up. I'm like, hey man, how you doing? You got a key to my place. Can you just let me in? You know? And I show up. Meanwhile, the only thing I could knock off was a fucking side mirror. And I go, Gene, hey, sorry, I got in an accident. He goes, did you just not show up to work because your side mirror was broken? And I go, look, man, I got a problem. I can't stop drinking. He's like, leave, you know, get your shit together. And so I went to an outpatient place and I just went in and I was like, hey, can I just get a note that says I'm getting better? Can you just give me a note that says he's going to get sober or something? And they're like, put your arms out. And I go, okay. And I'm like shaking. And they're like, when was the last time you had a drink? And I was like 7. And this was like 10 or 11 a.m. And they're like, do you realize that you're going into withdrawal? And I go, no, this happens every day. I get sick. I get colds. I keep getting sick. Yeah. Yeah. And I just didn't know I was going through withdrawals. And then I just knew when I drank, that'd make my cold go away. You know? So they go, look, you go to this place, you'll be there for like 2 days, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm going to get my job back. So I go and, you know, I fucking get loaded before I go. And then, you know, no, I didn't get loaded. I just had like an airplane, a little kicker of vodka. And then I go in and I end up staying for 35 days.
Damn, you know? 35 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't do it right at all. I fought the hottest chick there. We shacked up. I let her wear my Phillies hat so everyone knew she was mine. You know, I had to be top dog. And when you got a full set of teeth in a job, you're like the king of rehab. Dude, we're playing football. I'm stiff arming heroin addicts, fucking making it look like I'm the fucking man, you know?
The Barry Sanders of rehab over here.
I'm killing it in the anxiety crayon animation sessions, you know, where you draw your anxiety. I'm like, my picture's the best, you know?
That is fucking
so
great.
So on the last day of rehab, me and this girl like kiss, you know, and she moves into a halfway house in Wilkes-Barre. I get my job back, you know, and I tell my sponsor this time, like, yeah, man, this girl's great. She's up in Wilkes-Barre. We write letters, talking. She can only talk on the phone 10 minutes a day. It's perfect. And he's like, yeah, man, that's where all the good girls are in halfway houses in Wilkes-Barre, you know. But I got my job back and I'm ripping and running, dude. I'm doing side jobs. I'm just nonstop, like working, making my money back. And I just ran ragged. I stopped doing what they told me to do and, you know, started relapsing. And
how long before your first relapse?
Oh, man. I don't know. I got out in June. I started drinking in like September or something. No, October, November, I think.
3-4 months.
Yeah. But I had this moment, man, where, you know, because it was, I went in young and all my friends could keep drinking. And I'm just like, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just fucking, I can, it'll be different this time. That's the whole fucking thing. It'll be different this time. You know, and my body has an allergic reaction to alcohol where once I start drinking, no matter how hard I want to not to, I just can't stop. But I got a brain that tells me I don't. So my brain, I got a constant forgetter. And every time my brain's like, dude, it'll be different. You won't do this. Don't drink before noon. Don't drink brown liquor. Just drink vodka. Don't drink that. Just drink light beer. Bah, 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 bah. Don't drink. And it's always mental gymnastics to be like, well, no, I can have it anyway. So, dude, I'll never forget. I'm living in this farmhouse, and I'm like drinking real bad, and you know, vodka, getting loaded, high, and everything. And Christmas morning, I wake up and I go, "Look, man, it's Christmas. Give yourself a gift of sobriety." So I go down, I give my neighbor all my booze, and I go, "Hey, man, Merry Christmas. I'm getting sober. I can't do this, you know." Meanwhile, him and his girlfriend are watching my cat every time I go away to the hospital and shit, and I'm all the resolve in the world. I'm not fucking drinking. What a gift. Sobriety day, Christmas. Amazing. So I go to a family friend's house at like 2 p.m. and I steal their Jack Daniels and I leave and just go drink alone in my apartment.
That's even worse.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Well, I did it again, brother.
Oh, you know? No.
Yeah. And then like, dude, a couple weeks later, I just couldn't stop. And then, you know, God bless my mom, man. I had to go to, I lost my job again. And I got fired. And I immediately went to the liquor store and got a half gallon of vodka. Went home, somehow like called my friend. He came over, tried to steal my vodka, my lifelong best friend. We get in a fight in my kitchen because he's like not, you know, letting me have my vodka. And they take me to detox. I can't get into detox because I'm too loaded, so they gotta take me in the hospital. So I'm in the hospital, man, and I'm fucking losing it. They had to put a fucking spit mask on me, yanked my IV out. I'm spraying it on people. I'm fucking take my saline bag and I spike it on the ground like a football, and I'm like, just give me vodka and I'll be fine, you fucking morons, you know. And man, my mom had to come, she had to see that, and it was fucking terrible. I'm strapped down, you know. And so we go to my apartment to get my shit to pack another bag. Got to go away again. And so my mom's like on my side, like won't leave me because she wants to make sure I don't fucking drink. And I go down to my neighbor's because it's an old farmhouse. I'm living upstairs. There's a 2-bedroom downstairs, an efficiency in the basement, you know. So I go and knock on my neighbor's door. And my mom's like right behind me. And they're having a party, and my neighbor Jess, I'm like, hey, can you watch my cat? I gotta go away again. And her boyfriend Chris hates me, you know. And he goes, is that Ian? Fuck him, he's a piece of shit alcoholic, don't fucking help him. And dude, I blacked out, and the next thing I know, I am on top of him, choking him. In the middle of this party, fucking everything stops. I'm fucking choking him, and my mom's yanking me off of him.
Your
and
mom.
And my mom goes, my son is a good boy. Old Gail coming through, man.
Yeah.
My son is a good boy.
Yeah. Still so wholesome. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. She still got my back no matter what.
God,
you know?
Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know.
So then when do you hit the point where you finally say, all right,
oh, bro, this is fucking 2010, and I'm coming up on 8 years sober. My last drug and drink is 2015, so you do the math.
Five more years of that.
I'm still fighting it, man. I'm still fighting it, you know? I'm still thinking I can. Dude, I move into that halfway house, 2 years sober, start drinking in there, move to New York, start fucking drinking.
When you go into a halfway house.
Yeah.
You doesn't it hit you then, like, I'm living in a place with these other people and like I'm not in my home anymore?
Yeah, it's fucking hell.
But I mean, where are you with that? Do you embrace it? I feel like you would fucking, you just said you're the king of the fucking rehab.
Oh,
with
dude,
teeth and
110%
shit.
I embrace it.
You do, yeah. I just feel like you're the guy, the same energy, like I'm just gonna lean into this and fucking rock it.
Well, it's a thing, like I wanted to be sober. That's the thing. No, I would just keep, okay. It was never a thing, okay. Of like, I don't, it's just, it comes creeping in. And if I don't do my daily maintenance of what kept me sober yesterday and do it today, I'm going to fucking drink again.
Right.
So I would start to make money. I'd start to fucking this girl or this or that. And then I'm fucking slowly going, I can do it again. It was just young. I was dealing with this. And I love being sober. It's the fucking best. But it would slowly creep in and I would go, you know what? I'll have a fucking drink, you know? So I, being in that halfway house, it's a three quarters house. It was an Oxford house. So we didn't have like, you know, we weren't under supervision. It was self-governed. You know, we had like treasurers and, you know, comptrollers and chore coordinators, you know, it was like a setup to teach you how to live, you know? And our house was called the Emmett House in Newport, Delaware. We were the Diamond of the North. That's what we were called.
The Diamond of the North.
Because our house was like the elite house that was run the best. And all the other houses, man, people were smoking crack in the living room and everything. And our house is like, if you're fucking serious, you're coming to our house, you know? And so that was really cool getting in there. And that was like,
one of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
I'm really trying. And dude, I was on fucking fire, man. I didn't have a job. I burned every bridge, but I'm fucking picking up alcoholics, reading the big book on the way to fucking this detox to speak, this and that. I started an AA meeting in Delaware, solution based. I'm fucking feeling so on fire, man. I'm loving my life. I'm loving sobriety. I got nothing. I'm in a halfway house. I've never felt better, you know? And, on the way to these meetings and everything, we would listen, I'd put on comedy records, you know? So like, and when I was working that construction job, I'd put on comedy records. I'd put on Attell, I'd put on Hedberg, Carlin, whatever. And, you know, we're listening to Patton Oswalt on the way to these meetings, you know? So comedy was always like a thing, you know? And I started comedy in sobriety. I started living in a halfway house in 2011, and I started in Philly. And, you know, but I didn't tell anyone in Philly what it was, except for my one friend, Tim Butterly, great comic. He and I are still dear friends today. I'm still friends with all my guys I started with, which is like fucking amazing. I love it. And, I would pick him up in Kensington and go to Philly, but I had a breathalyzer on my car. And I told him not to tell anyone. So I'm picking him up and we're going over bits and I'm like, okay, so I'm thinking about this tag. Hold on. Okay, so I'm thinking about this tag, you know. I'm like, don't tell anyone. I'm fucking picking this dude up. I had a breathalyzer in my car for like 9 months, you know. But I don't want anyone to know because I'm afraid they're going to like not be my friend and think I'm like a freak, you know. And yeah, so I had always, I loved sobriety, man. It's the best. But it would always seep back in, you know. And then finally, I got my ass kicked enough to the point where I'm like, I'm fucking so beat up. And also to tell you the truth, man, I tried everything with like programs of recovery and I always had that obsession, always whatever. And then finally in 2015, I got hooked up with a drug called naltrexone, which is almost like an opiate blocker. So where in my mind, where there's like a hole for the dopamine and like that thing and everything, it basically fills that up and all the wires that are crisscross, it connects them. So, dude, I was on this medicine and like truly made my obsession and craving go away in tandem with therapy and program and recovery and everything. So, you know, yeah. So I haven't coming up on 8 years sober. That's in April, great, man. Yeah.
Because I wanted to ask you what it was that finally clicked, and part of it is medication, which I wasn't expecting to hear. I didn't know that was a thing.
Not many people do.
For alcohol, though.
Not many people do.
I mean, I know about it for other, you know, like methadone,
for heroin. At the time, only like
2%
of alcoholics in the country were on this medicine. Wow. I checked myself into an outpatient place in New York, saved my life, Greenwich House, and they were like,
Was this an experimental thing when you took it at the time? Is that why maybe a lot of people don't know
about
it? I don't
know if it was experimental. I just know not many people were exposed to it.
I see.
I wasn't like an experiment. I was just lucky enough to be in a place where they
knew about it.
Yeah. Because a big thing with programs of recovery is like, you got a hole in your soul. It's God. You need this. You're defective. You work on that. And I'm like, I'm doing every fucking thing and I can't stop, motherfucker.
I'm gay for God.
I'm gay for God and I'm still fucking drinking. What more do you want? You know? If the cure's at the bottom of a priest's penis, I'll fucking suck it out. Let's go. You know? But,
So yeah, that's brand new to me right there. Yeah. I've never heard that before. So that it can help with alcohol.
Totally.
Hell yeah. What's it called?
Naltrexone.
All right. Can I ask you, what you have any crazy side effects off of it? Is because I know these Chantix that would stop people from smoking were having people go kill people.
No.
I don't know if that's accurate. Chantix, don't come at
it. It makes you
crazy,
suicide,
right? Yeah, so maybe kill themselves.
Yeah. No. It's an abuse is a drug you take where if you drink, you immediately puke. But naltrexone made it so that like I wasn't obsessing about, dude, I would window shop. I would go to a liquor store and just look around and be like, in sobriety. I would watch videos of people chugging vodka. Like it's, when you relapse, it's not your drink. It happens way beforehand. It goes into your thinking. It goes into your actions. You can see it coming, you know, and all the signs would come and I would just be like, fuck it. You know, you get a case of the fuckets.
How quickly did it hit? How quickly did you feel that change? Yeah.
Fucking.
Immediately?
Yeah.
Wow.
In like a week or two. And again, like I was going to a meeting. I was working on shit. I wasn't just like pill, done.
Right.
I'm like in group therapy. I'm in therapy twice a week. Group therapy was I was in group therapy for self-esteem, you know? And that was fucking great. Me and just a bunch of fucking crackheads from the Bronx and everything.
Is that what it was?
Learning how to love ourselves. Yeah, dude. Yeah, it was fucking great. It was awesome. I love it. Yeah, my man, the counselor Daryl, he and I would roast each other. And I'd be like, you look like Grimace wearing that purple shirt. And he'd be like, you look like you'd use your this and that. Like he'd rip me on some insecurity. I'm like, all right, Daryl, you win this one.
All right,
you
know? Daryl, I'll be back, motherfucker.
Yeah. You look like you can't live a life sober. And I'm like, oh, you son of a bitch.
I'm outright you one day,
Daryl. You got me, Daryl. You know?
Dude, this has been an absolutely fucking fantastic goddamn wild episode. It really has. I'm sorry.
For what?
I'm just saying, you know, because Kelsey Cook said this great. When you come sit in that chair, shit hadn't been good. You know what I mean?
But you know what, man?
But for you to come on and joke and laugh, like it is so cathartic and so therapeutic for people who haven't lived what you've lived.
Yeah.
I mean, just losing your father at 8's enough. Then you're battling addiction on top of it, you know?
But here's the thing,
it's a
man.
Lot.
I obviously, yes. And I appreciate that. And I'm just so like grateful that I'm at a place where I'm all right with it, man. It's okay, you know? Like,
yeah, you seem to be loving yourself these days.
Yeah.
I mean, you're very open about your sexuality.
Yeah.
You're very open about your life, your trauma, all of it. So good
well,
for
dude,
you.
Again,
and
man,
you're clean and sober.
In those letters my dad wrote, I just never saw it.
Please tell me about those. How did you find, who brought those up to you?
They were hidden in my mom's closet.
And did she find them?
I found them.
You found them?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you could have moved out. Your mom could have left that house and
we're still in the same house.
That's what I'm saying.
Same
but if
car,
she'd have moved,
house.
Everything's, yeah. you yeah. don't get those.
Yeah.
So
but
how'd you
I
come
found
across?
Them, man. And, dude, well, the letters my dad wrote when I was in the hospital are like the most touching, amazing things. And even just like the words he said. And, you know, my dad was this like muscle fucking tough dude, worked on a train yard, whatever, but he was so sensitive and so like spiritually in tune. And like, you know, he was the only boy in a house of sisters and everything. And like, he was the guy that was the glue of his friend group. And they all said, you know, like John wasn't afraid to hug us. John wasn't afraid to, you know, whatever, but he was a really bad alcoholic. He was a really bad drug addict. And then he stopped. And in these letters, I also found a journal of his that he kept when he was like 24, 25. And in the journal, when he met my mom, he was keeping a journal. And so it was pretty wild, man. And again, like me and my dad, he's here. He's with me. I see him. I talk to him. I believe in spirits. I believe in when we leave a thumbprint on people, and it's up to us to see their spirit in others and in ourselves and in little things. And I don't know if I believe in heaven and hell, but I believe in a memory. And heaven is, if you live a good life, you leave a heavenly memory with people. And if you live a shit life, you're living in hell because people are going to hate you. And this man is living in heaven in my mind's eye. And man, when he was talking about my mom, before he met her, he was writing in November of 1980. He was writing for the date December. And he goes, and it kept getting crossed out right in November. And he goes, I don't know why I'm writing December. I keep seeing December. I feel like there's going to be a change in December. Come December, he met my mom. And
shit. And that's in that journal, huh?
Yeah. But I found in the journal, he was talking about getting sober. He was talking about never using needles again. He was talking about, you know, his fears of having a kid, of passing these things on. He was talking about love and spirituality, you know, and I got to see him in this way because I always wanted to know him as an old guy, you know, always wanted to know him as an adult. And, you know, I got to know him in a way. And we would always joke when I was a kid, like, he and I are going to live together when we're older and we're going to be in a front porch watching the sun come up. And our teeth are going to fall out. We're gonna, whose teeth are those? You know, and I see I see my dad in other people, and I see him in things. And, you know, I've been so blessed and fortunate to have the relationships I have with people. And, you know, Attell has become a dear, dear friend and brother and mentor, and more than just comedically, just as like a person. And it's so funny, this thing came up because I opened for him. And we are chatty Cathy's and we're on the phone and everything, you know. And he and I, after gigs, we just sit and smoke cigarettes and laugh. And I'm like, man, I don't know my dad, but I have experiences that I could have had with him with others. And I'm grateful for that, you know, and I'm grateful I can see that. And as long as I live my life knowing that that dude's with me, he was so important to me. And all my dreams about him are me introducing him to my friends because he was so cool. And all my friends would come over and my dad would take us to the park and everything, you know. So I try to live my life to where if you know me and like me, you would have loved John, you know. And I want people to see how great my dad was through me. And I want people to see how great my mom is through me. You know, my mom saved my life. This woman has my back no matter what. These
literally,
two people.
She's in that house party.
Yeah, she hacked me off a guy. I was assaulting a motherfucker.
Gail ready to go.
You know, and I see, dude, I see my mom in me. I see my dad. I see my grandfather. And it's so cool. I get to share these people with others, you know.
That's how I feel about like this podcast. When I've been able to do like to keep my father's memory alive and my grandmother's as well. My special that's coming out soon is called Lefty's Son because it's all about him. He also gave me this stupid genetic blood disease that has me in the fucking hospital almost dying. So, yeah, I get it. And I love that I've been able to keep their memory alive and stories of them from strangers. Been like that story you told about your dad trying to burn that snake out of that hole is you know, whatever the fuck it is. When that comes back, and I was fortunate enough to have a Topps baseball card, and they give you a relic one, it's called. It's a game-worn jersey. So I took his old work shirt and I had it put in there.
Oh,
so
man.
Now whenever I'm at shows and someone, they're like, I got one of those. It's like, I get to say hello to my friend. I'm like, you know what I mean? It's like a little boom. There's
I
my
love
dad
that,
coming
man.
Back to me. So
I love that. How fortunate are we?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know? So lucky.
Like it's so cool that as a byproduct of us sharing, having this conversation, it's going to hit other people.
Yeah,
for sure. No matter what, like I growing up, no one I knew had dead dads. No, I was the only one, you know? And then you get involved in comedy and you're like, oh fuck, man, I found my people, you know?
Same thing I said. I never related to anybody, even parents.
Yeah.
Parents don't, their parents were still alive, my friend's parents. So they don't even know how to talk to me or what to say to me in their defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, man, we have one friend whose dad died, but his mom was with him.
Mm-hmm.
Our mom had already left and was like, good luck to you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
So it was different for us. We didn't know anyone like that.
Damn.
And you don't talk to anybody. You can't relate to anybody like that. And then when you get to comedy, you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
God, I feel so much better, man, around you.
How crazy is it that our lives could be enriched and better through something as silly as jokes?
Yep.
You know, it's the fucking best, man. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just, this was really fun. This was really great.
Thank
I
you,
needed
dude.
This.
Yeah, me too.
I really did.
Before you go,
yeah.
Two things. One, advice you would give to your 16-year-old self first, and I want you to promote everything again. So please, advice, after what everything we've talked about today, what are you telling 16-year-old Ian Fidance?
It's going to be okay, and I love you.
Fuck yeah. That's yeah. great, dude.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is just that.
Yeah.
Good for you. Please, plug everything one more time.
iAnimal69 on Instagram, Twitter, and Twitch, IanFidance.com for all my dates, and my podcast, B and Ian with Jordan, Patreon.com/BandIanPod. It's the fucking best, man. We're having a blast. It's on YouTube. It's like a very visual podcast. And bye, guys, with Zach and Ian on Gas Digital, too.
This was so much fun, dude.
It really was.
It
man.
Was. I yeah. knew it would be good.
Thank
I've been
you.
Waiting to get you on here, dude.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
Thank you. As always, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. We'll talk to y'all next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.